Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Breaks the tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College of Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May, and you can find me on Twitter at @FF_TravisM and Titan Travis on Clubhouse. If you're joining us for the first time, College of Canton is a show about the journey of the best football players in the world. They're up from high school football recruits through college and through the NFL draft all the way to the discussion as to whether they should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We always talk some fantasy football since this is a RotoViz Radio podcast, but we always make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And I'm joined once again by my faithful co-host here, Stéphane Lecoe. You can find him on Twitter at Stéphane Lecoe. He is the host of the RotoViz College Football podcast as well, and a writer here with the RotoViz Devi Fantasy Football team. Welcome back, man.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, I think you're
to talk about some college stuff, man. This is great.
Oh, yeah. And you're joining me from Seattle this week. I mean, just mixing it up, huh?
Yes. Yep. Traveling around up in Seattle this week. We're on our way to the San Juan Islands just off the coast of Washington and near the Canadian border. It's going to be lovely.
Nice. And I hear that you tried your hand at some skimboarding, which was I love to do.
Yes. Yeah, we tried it yesterday. We went down to the beach. There's like a small, like, it's a beautiful beach, but there's like a little tiny creek there as well. So you can either do it in the creek or just do it right on the shore. And it looks, it's one of those things that looks a lot easier than it actually is. Because when I got out there, I had some pretty good biffs. It was pretty epic. And today, my legs are so sore. Like, my hamstrings are killing me.
I bet, man. As few of our loyal listeners and league mates of not mine know, and we'll joke. In fact, it's a thing now. Like, if I take too long to make a pick in a couple of my leagues, they're like, oh, Travis must be off skimboarding again. So yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do. But even I'm not that great at it, but it will hurt if you if you screw up. But this is not actually a skimboarding podcast. This is actually a football podcast.
We're gonna work on that.
Yes, yeah, we'll mix it up and sprinkle some stuff in there. Maybe our favorite wipeout stories or something later, but not right now. We're gonna pivot back to some college football talk. We've been going back and forth talking about rookies and the incoming class this year headed to the NFL. Talking about some NFL future Hall of Famers, talking about some college players. We even had earlier to start off the summer, we had a mixed Devy and rookie draft. But we are going to pivot back to the Devy or college side of the ball. And if, again, listeners, if you're newer to the show, we've been adding some people, some new faces this summer. If you're not unfamiliar with Devy Fantasy Football, you basically can just roster players while they're still in college. And then when they graduate or declare early, they're automatically on your favorite fantasy football team. So we're going to talk about our top candidates to make a difference in the NFL here soon. In the 2022 draft, 2023, 2024, some of the biggest names. And talk about the RotoViz ranking specifically. That is me, Stéphane, and Matt Wispay, who could not join us on this special episode, but talk about some of the most controversial names and some of the ones that we are most confident in as well in terms of maintaining their value through this fall. and maybe even seeing a spike here in the near future, since college football is, believe it or not, like what, just one month away. So without further ado, I just want to jump right in and talk about some of these quarterbacks, because we just saw five first round quarterbacks this year. There was a real chance that even as late as November or December that we would see, there was debate as if we could see six first round quarterbacks in this draft, and it ended up being five. Next year looks to be another draft with several quarterbacks that have solid passing efficiency profiles. So I just want to kick it off to you, because it looks like, Stefan, you and I and Matt, we really have a pretty clear top four quarterbacks that we believe will be early first round draft picks right now, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting piece of it is that the guy that you and I are the highest on, and I think Matt is too, he's not actually going to be eligible for this upcoming draft because DJ Uiagalelei, he's still going to have to wait a year. But beyond him, there's a handful of guys that I think are going to be really interesting. I find it difficult to rank them, honestly. Like in drafts, I keep back and forth on which guy I like the most. So like whether it's, you know, Rattler or Howell, and then, you know, Slovis and even Jaden JT Daniels. It's a toss-up. Depending on the day, I can lean different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you get past the top-tier guys, there are so many different ways you could go, because there's so many guys with great passing profiles in today's game, where we see just incredible efficiency all over college football. But DJ Uiagalelei of Clemson, Spencer Rattler of Oklahoma, Sam Howell of North Carolina, and even though we've not seen much of him on the field, Bryce Young, quarterback, Alabama. Those are our top four. All of them we have as first round Devy draft picks, clear just easily. And then we kind of have a tier break. After that, I mean, it gets down to Keaton Slovis, which I think a lot of people still have him up in the same tier as the guys that we just mentioned. But you do have even some of the freshmen like Caleb Williams going to Oklahoma behind Spencer Rattler. You have Jaden Daniels over at Arizona State. You got C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. He looks to be the front runner to win that job this year and immediately replace Justin Fields in just an absolutely stacked wide receiver room there to kind of toss the rock to. And then J.T. Daniels, he's without George Pickens, but he really came on strong and posted a 90th percentile plus passing efficiency year last year. And then you get to guys like Malik Willis of Liberty, kind of this crazy dual threat, awesome, fun passer. Some people, due to his arm strength, are projecting him for first round capital. So do you have like I know you said you kind of go back and forth a little bit with the tier two guys, but as of right now, today, do you kind of have a my guy in that tier two that you keep on finding yourself ranking higher and higher? And as you kind of look at your own ranks right now, you may even find yourself amping up just a bit here soon?
Yeah, I think it's Daniels. And before you ask which one, the answer is both.
JT both, and Jaden.
Yeah, JT and Jaden. I think my biggest concern with Jaden Daniels was the size. Like, he's just a small dude. Like, I think he asks a lot of questions. Like, you have to have a lot of faith in him to be able to avoid some of those big hits when he does run the ball, because he did increase that part of his game. Arizona State only played in four games last year, so it's really hard to really project much from that. But he did put on some weight this offseason. He has just incredible efficiency. I really love him. I think so far through two seasons, he's only thrown three interceptions. That's off the top of my head, so I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah. I just wrote an article on him, so I think that's right. But he's just so good. I really, really like him. And then, like you said, with JT Daniels, like seeing the transformation of that Georgia offense once he entered the scene, it's like night and day. So if he gets a whole year, like, sure, I think we're all upset that we don't get to see George Pickens out there. However, like, Eric Gilbert is there now, if I'm not mistaken, and they've brought in a couple other guys. Karis Jackson, he's coming back. He's a productive receiver. So I think he could be absolutely outstanding, and given a full season to show us what he has, I think he could move up boards pretty quickly. So both the Daniels are guys that I'm really happy. If I miss out on one of those tier one guys, I'm really happy to put my faith in them as my QB moving forward for Devy purposes.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun to see what happens with both of them in different situations. Arizona State, though, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. I'm thinking the longer the investigation takes with the allegations of their recruiting violations and such, I'm thinking whatever happens in terms of penalty, especially when it comes to the players and everything, it looks like it's probably going to be beyond this season. Let's hope that's actually the case so that Jaden Daniels can get a good season. He didn't look exactly as efficient last year. The whole offense struggled. It was a weird year. His COVID season, they were probably one of the more affected teams of the bunch last year.
Oh, yeah.
So he does have a 92nd percentile passing efficiency season under his belt and a year where he actually accounted for more than 20% of his team's rushing yards as well, which I'm actually about to release a piece over at RotoBiz on how important it is to mix in passing efficiency with peak solid rushing yard market share numbers for quarterbacks in both predicting draft capital and predicting future fantasy points. And Jaden Daniels has one of the best mixes of those two. So he's a solid bet, just analytically speaking, moving forward, regardless of how skinny he may be. But my guy that I'm finding myself ranking higher and higher and higher, despite the fact that he doesn't have that 90th percentile plus, you know, top tier, top notch passing efficiency season just yet, is Malik Willis of Liberty. He came in, former Auburn guy, transferred to Liberty, and their offensive scheme, they just said, hey, Malik, just go sling it around a bit. And hey, just go run it around a bit, to the tune of accounting for nearly 40% of that offense, even on the ground. So Malik Willis, you know, the first overall pick in most college fantasy football drafts by many people's rankings all over the place, looks like he could take an even further step this fall. And if he cleans up his passing efficiency numbers in terms of accounting for various schematic variables and such, I really could go all in with believing in Malik Willis because he's got some arm strength. He's got the crazy mobility. He doesn't have that perfect ideal size, but he's a lot of fun. And a couple other guys that I like that I hope get drafted, at least. I don't think that they're going to be first round picks, but analytically speaking, they should be guys that get some capital. Malik Cunningham of Louisville and De'Arik King of Miami, guys that have that fantastic 90th percentile plus peak passing efficiency numbers and solid rushing yard market share, easily over the you know minimum threshold we like to see of like 5%. They're actually almost 20% for both of them, Malik Cunningham of Louisville and De'Arik King of Miami. So there's some fun mobile guys that might end up getting some capital here. And there, I know we love to see like top tier, top notch first round guys only, but I always love rooting for those mobile guys that are just a lot of fun to watch. Because I think that's really where the NFL is headed, right? Like this statue quarterback thing is like almost dead, right?
Yeah, and that like when we get into some of these freshman guys, I think that's where I differentiate a lot of them is the people like these players that don't run much and haven't proven to run much kind of make me nervous. Like a Sam Heward, for example, like. He has 107 career rushing yards. Like, no, thank you. I'm going to pass on that because I don't see that being the future of the NFL. And even if it is, for fantasy football, we all know that, like, running quarterbacks, even if it's not like a Lamar Jackson type runner, but being able to contribute to some degree in the rushing game is absolutely imperative if you want to get an edge in most of your leagues.
Oh, yeah.
About Malik Willis, I just pulled up Liberty's schedule. And their Power 5 opponents this year are Syracuse and Ole Miss. So I can see why
that's what I'm saying.
Fantasy college
yes.
Production, he's going to be lights up because he's not playing against anybody this year.
But
do you think that will hurt him as far as draft pedigree goes? Like where he
honestly, hey, the NFL clearly doesn't care about competition or level of schedule or level of play almost at all because they just drafted Trey Lance top 10 and Zach Wilson top 10. Zach Wilson he barely had a top 100 schedule in terms of difficulty last year. Trey Lance had one game last year against Central Arkansas. And so Malik Willis absolutely just runs college football like I believe he will next year. I think he's going to be one that soars up into the range of Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell and is right next to them. And I'm not there with a guy who some people really like, and that is Carson Strong of Nevada. So he is going to have those competition questions, and that he plays absolutely no one, because right now, frankly, the Mountain West isn't super high. And then there's the fact that he's not even just a zero in the running game. He's actually a negative in the running game. He accounted for negative 8.5% of the rushing yards for Nevada in his best passing season. So he's an absolute zero as a rusher. So, I mean, ideally, even if you think he has decent arm strength, maybe at best we're talking about like regular season Eli Manning. So sorry, I'm not really excited about that kind of upside in today's NFL. I'm just not going to get there with him. And I honestly, at this point, doubt he gets early first round capital. Like, he might be a guy that gets that Mac Jones treatment, because Mac Jones was, but even Mac Jones was like not a negative. He was just barely like breaking even on the rushing yard scale. I don't get the argument for Carson Strong. He does some fun things from time to time, but not there for me. And that is my concern with JT Daniels at Georgia, just because he's also a big negative in the rushing game. So those guys are going to have to figure out a way to get mobile, as well as even Keaton Slovis, not as big of a negative in the running game. He can at least manipulate the pocket a little bit better than Strong. But they're going to have to find a way to contribute, or I don't think that they're going to get the capital that a lot of people are expecting them to get. In fact, do you know how many quarterbacks in the last five drafts that were a negative in the rushing game actually saw first round capital?
That were
a negative. Like, actually had, in their peak efficiency passing season, they actually had negative rushing yards.
And I'm guessing maybe there's like one or two outliers, but I'm guessing that number is going to be close to zero.
Yeah, it's there's been 19 first rounders in the past 5 years, and only one of them had negative rushing yards. And do you know who his name is?
Give it to me.
Josh Rosen.
Yeah. Dude.
That went really well, right?
There's out there somehow, man.
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh.
I don't get it.
That went really well. That's what a non-mobile quarterback looks like in the NFL. The team apparently just gives up on them immediately, because you have to. You have to. Like, yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, Tom Brady's still slinging it. A bunch of experienced old guys who have 20 years of experience slinging it around and standing like a statue, they can make it work because they've got the experience. But in today's NFL, it's just dead. It's no longer there. It's not going to be a thing. So these guys are going to have to add something in the run game this year, or they're not getting first round capital. Just not going
to
happen.
Yeah, like, I think, to your point, like, I think a Carson Strong ends up, you know, early day two type capital would be my guess. But
yeah, Drew Lock treatment.
Someone will want him, because, that, you know, 6'5" or whatever, and he's got the build of one of those quarterbacks. He's got the arm talent, and he'll have the numbers. But to your point, I think anyone's going to be like, let's build our franchise on this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he gets the Paxton Lynch treatment because somebody's really bad at this and ignores analytics in the year 2021 or 2022 next spring. His career is probably going to go just as well. But, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't some great profiles to get excited about. I think that based on just the passing efficiency numbers for current college passers, we could see a record number of signal callers get drafted next year. We could see 15 plus guys get drafted. I'm just saying the negative rushing yard guys in today's day and age probably aren't the safest bets. But let's squeeze in some tight end talk here before we talk about some controversial running backs and wide receivers that we have ranked here and there. And by the way, actually, before we move away from quarterbacks, the top four, just so listeners know, we don't have four quarterbacks that we are pretty confident in. We mentioned that. But really, we have, I think, let's see, in kind of the tier two range of our ranks, we have a total of like seven guys, all of which we talked about just in passing, Caleb Williams and Tyler Buchner being the true freshmen up there. And then that tier three includes all the guys we just mentioned, but we have like almost 20 guys in like our tier three of quarterback. Yeah. That's just how deep that position is right now. But moving on to some tight ends, if the first one actually can even be counted as a tight end anymore, let's talk about some of the top bets to be like first round guys. Because I don't even care, you know, maybe like early day two guys. Okay, that's fine. But we just saw like the late day two tight ends this year be guys like Tommy Tremble and Hunter Long, and they're not safe bets for early production whatsoever, right? We want to get the next Kyle Pitts, right? We want the fantasy points now. Like, we're impatient.
Right.
So Eric Gilbert leaves LSU, goes to Georgia, is the consensus top tight end, the highest ranked and rated tight end prospect in recruiting history. Leaves the program at LSU, goes to Georgia, and now they're saying, hey, we're actually going to play him at wide receiver. I'm thinking essentially he's going to play tight end in whatever we call a tight end in today's NFL, which is basically just a big slot wide receiver. And that's probably how he's going to be used. Darnell Washington is another five-star guy they have there at tight end. They'll probably actually use him as a blocker and maybe a receiver in the end zone, but I'm not really super interested in him as much as I am Eric Gilbert just being the smash guy to target this year. And he's really a wide receiver slash tight end, right? In that kind of Mark Andrews kind of mold, or really Travis Kelce kind of mold. So how big of a tier break for you, Stefan, is there after Eric Gilbert?
Well, it's significant, you know, but I think Michael Meyer is right there, like not that far behind, as far as like what I think it means for the NFL. I don't know if he'll be utilized quite as much as we want to this year for Notre Dame, but I think once he gets to the NFL, they're going to utilize his receiving potential much more. But Notre Dame is notorious for having, you know, their tight ends and wide receivers look very similar, you know, like these last couple of years. And maybe that's an Ian Book problem where he just wasn't forcing the football down the field and they didn't have burners to go down the field and get it. Although, you know, Chase Claypool, was what was going on with that? Yeah. So to me, I think his profile, I think, could be very interesting once he gets to the NFL, someone that I'd be excited about. I'm also, though, to be honest with you, man, like, I'm kind of high on Jalen Watermeyer too, out of A&M. I think he could be extremely exciting. So while I think Gilbert is the standout, if anyone's going to kind of look like Kyle Pitts, it's him. I'm pretty excited about these high end tier two guys that we have. I mean, throw Billingsley in there too. We've talked about him before and I like him. And I think he could be a pretty big part of Alabama's offense this year. Just, you know, as one of the few returning starters from last year. But after those, you know, tier two guys, it's after those dudes that the chasm really hits. And I'm like, yeah, I just won't be rostering any of these guys in any normal Devy league.
Yeah. And it's tough because, I mean, if it's not like a college, the Canton format where you have to kind of roster tight ends because you have a college roster to play every single week, there's not a huge incentive to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go all in on tight end early. But why right. Gilbert to me is so intriguing is he could be whatever. I think he's going to be a tight end designation when he gets to the pros. And he has that size mixed with incredible speed and ball skills that I think he could immediately be that the next big Kyle Pitts phenom that we're all excited about and everyone's drooling over in the year 2023 when he and Michael Mayer actually come out into the NFL. Jahleel Billingsley, you mentioned him, of Alabama. He and Jalen Watermeyer are both eligible for 2022. I think Watermeyer being the thicker, more typical body for tight end, I'm a little bit higher on him. But Billingsley, they're pretty close in our collective rankings. Like they're, you know, in that kind of pick 60-ish range overall, which is pretty significant investment depending on the depth of the league that you play in. If you were starting this year, that's basically saying that they're both back into the fifth round type of investment, even though they're tight ends. But I don't think that either of them have that top 10 NFL draft pick upside. I think Weidemeyer could sneak into round one. Billingsley could be a day two type of play. But Michael Mayer, we keep on kind of alluding to him on the fringes here, but Notre Dame, he was a five-star, fringe five-star tight end in the same class as Gilbert. And he actually was kind of the go-to chain mover last year for Notre Dame because they were out some of the more trustworthy guys that they were supposed to go to in the preseason. I remember like Braden Lindsey and Kevin Austin were getting hyped up for them, and both of them missed time. And then they went a few different directions at wide receiver. But, it, you know, they really had to rely on a true freshman tight end, and he was up to the challenge. And really having, like, what was it, like 40-plus catches as a true freshman, that's really, really rare for a tight end in college. Like, tight ends just don't produce in college. I think I've said it 1,000 times on this show and others. It just doesn't happen. So do you think that Mayer is somebody who could get first-round capital as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point, I think his numbers speak to that. As a freshman, putting up 450 yards and averaging over 10.5 yards of reception, the dude is like primed to be their go-to weapon on offense again. I think they had some exciting wide receivers brought in, but to me, he's going to be the focal point of that passing offense. And I know you're a huge Buckner fan, so it could really be a nice safety blanket for him to have, someone exciting for him to go to.
Yeah, and even if Jack Cohn's the guy this year, he was known to go, even at Wisconsin, to his tight end quite a bit with Jake Ferguson. So I think that's a nice pairing with Jack Cohn or Tyler Buckner, whoever's at the helm at any point for Notre Dame. So Michael Mayer, his stock should continue to rise. Another wild card guy, I think I'm the only one that has him in among our rankers, having him has him in the top 100 overall. But Austin Stogner of Oklahoma, I mentioned a couple of these guys looking like a modern-day Mark Andrews. Stogner is Mark Andrews, and he played for the same college team in the same exact scheme even. Like, he's right there doing it. He's like that big slot slash tight end that is athletic and should probably continue to produce this year. Even though Oklahoma is absolutely stacked at wide receiver, they still found a way to feed Stogner as well. So I think Stogner is big enough, athletic enough, that I think he's going to find a way to get some capital. Could be a day two guy next year. He had over 400 receiving yards in just 8 healthy games last year. So at 6'6", 260, he's somebody that I think we all should probably take a look at and perhaps rank even higher in near the tier of Jahleel Billingsley and Jalen Weidemeyer. But any other tight ends you want to talk about before we get into some controversial running backs and wide receivers, guys we disagree on a little bit?
No, I mean, I was going, I mean, Charlie Kohler for Iowa State is a dude that I think people should be interested in, but I think their offense isn't going to highlight him. I think he's a big bodied tight end. He's a pretty decent blocker. I think he could see, you know, again, day two capital, but not someone that you need to be rostering in Devy at this point.
Yeah, unless it's a pretty deep league, I'm not super interested in him either, but I do think he could be that sneakier day two tight end that you get super late in a lot of rookie drafts next year in Dynasty, and could come into play for fantasy football for sure. But before we kick over to some controversial running backs and wide receivers, just a word from our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I just want to take a second to thank you for tuning in to today's show. My name is Colm Kelly, co-host of the Road of His Overtime podcast, along with the great Sean Siegel. We do appreciate each and every listener, and as a thank you to each of you, you can get yourself a 10% discount to a Road of His NFL pass. We're heading at full speed towards the season. Make sure you're ready. Get yourself access to all the content and tools up on the Road of His website. All you have to do is add the code RVRadio2021 at checkout to get yourself that 10% discount. Now let's go and dominate those fantasy leagues in 2021.
So we talked about some quarterbacks, some of the top names and some of the deeper guys, and how next year could be full of guys with great passing profiles, but maybe less than stellar mobility numbers. Talked about some top tight ends, but kicking it over to some running backs, because that's the position that we all are always looking for the next big thing in fantasy football. We're all, even if you're just a casual fan of football, you all always want to know the top-notch running back names to know. This year's running backs were kind of gross, right? They were outside of Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams. I mean, maybe you can squint and get excited about Trey Sermon, or maybe you can really squint and poke one eye out and like look at like Michael Carter and think that he's going to be a thing for the Jets. I know you like Michael Carter. I liked him too, but I'm not sure about the landing spot. And he was still a fourth round pick. A kind of a shallow class. We knew that for, well, really a few years going into this, that it was going to be a shallow class. And then next year, again, it looks like kind of a shallow class. 2023 looks like it could be stacked at running back. But even if you look at the recruiting ranks this year, it looks like we're going to be in for another shallow running back class. So finding the right guys, the right ones to believe in the next couple of years could be a huge, huge, huge difference maker in fantasy football, because the list of names coming in seems to just be getting shorter and shorter and shorter, with the exception of maybe the 2023 class. So looking at just next year's guys, there are a few obvious names that we're pretty confident in. Breece Hall. All the big draft nicks are already talking about him. Isaiah Spiller, same deal. It's like those guys are kind of in a league of their own. Kyren Williams, pretty much top five in anybody's list that you want to talk to. A Notre Dame running back. Maybe he needs to clean up some ball security stuff and maybe get a couple pounds heavier, maybe. But Eric Gray is going to be somebody that I think is very controversial until he officially explodes for Oklahoma. Because I know Matt Wisbey loves him, like fellow Debbie wrote of his ranker, loves Eric Gray and has essentially bullied you and I into ranking him higher. But yeah, for sure. I mean, what are your thoughts on him? Like, what do you think? It's just a done deal that Eric Gray is going to be the dude this year?
No, I don't. Matt and I will go round and round on this, but like,
glad he's not here to defend himself then.
Yeah, no, that makes it way easier to try to win a debate. Like, I think Eric Gray is a really talented running back. I'm excited for what he can do, but I just want to, like, I'm just going to read over two seasons. I'm going to talk about a guy with 274 carries for 2,067 yards and 18 rushing touchdowns, and then throw in those 23 games, you know, 20 receptions, 140 yards receiving. I'm talking about a man named Kennedy Brooks. Like, Kennedy Brooks missed last year because of an injury. But he's back. He is in that Oklahoma backfield. And I don't think he's ready to hand over the keys to the car to Eric Gray and be like, yeah, go ahead and take it and roll with it. I'm just going to watch it from the sidelines. Like, Kennedy Brooks came back because he wants to play and he wants to get some draft capital of his own. So I don't think Lincoln Riley is going to be like done with him either. He saw what Kennedy can do. So to me, Eric Gray is going to have to be otherworldly to take Kennedy Brooks off the field. I just don't see that happening. I don't see Kennedy Brooks giving that away. And because, like, I kind of view, again, I was high on Kennedy Brooks his freshman year. I kind of called my shot on him, so I might be overly high on him. In fact, everyone else kind of moved him up, and I stayed level, and so I'm no longer the high guy. But I just believe in Kennedy Brooks' talent, and so I can't just be like, no, yeah. So it's all Eric Gray. So to me, there's too much risk to want to pay the price on Eric Gray when you can get Kennedy Brooks so much later. Still invest in that Oklahoma backfield, and who knows? I put it at 50-50 myself as to which one ends up being more productive this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not willing to take the risk on Eric Gray.
Yeah, and what's funny is it's not too often people might be listening that play Debbie and confidently rank Eric Gray highly and are just thinking, Stefan, what are you doing? Like, what are you talking about? But how often do we just completely dismiss a running back at Oklahoma that puts up back-to-back like 1,100-yard seasons in their first two years? Like, has that ever been done? Like, until now? Like, I know we missed time last year, and Yes, he faces some kind of easier boxes because of the scheme for Oklahoma. But, you know, even when he was sharing the backfield with Trey Sermon back in 2018, he actually had more rushing yards, and he actually was more efficient with his touches than Trey Sermon, a guy that just got day two capital. And then in his next season, in Ramondre Stevenson's first year with Oklahoma, Stevenson wasn't like a freshman, by the way. He was a JUCO transfer, one of the top JUCO transfers coming in. And he actually easily surpassed the production of Ramondre Stevenson. Stevenson just, of course, got fourth round capital. And so Kennedy Brooks returns. Eric Gray is the new kid in town, comes over from Tennessee, who has a pretty good resume. Even on a dumpster fire Tennessee squad, he was doing good things. But yeah, I think this year we're going to see both of them produce. We did see Ramondre Stevenson put up like almost 900 yards from scrimmage in the final six games for Oklahoma last year. But I think it's going to be more of a split this year. Ramondre Stevenson became the guy because he was actually suspended for the first half of last year, and they needed some continuity. Like, they kept on, because Brooks was gone, they were in this weird situation. They were just trying the hot hand at running back, and they were like, oh, thank God. Thank goodness Ramondre's back, and just fed him. But I think now that they have two good running backs, they're just going to feed both of them. And even though that's not necessarily a bad thing, I think that will knock Eric Gray's stock. And I'm not saying Kennedy Brooks is going to be a first rounder. I'm not even saying that he's necessarily going to be a day two pick. I'm just thinking that both of these guys, like, what happens if they both split? They get about around 1,000 yards apiece, and they're both early day three guys. Like, then you're going to be kind of just upset that you spent whatever you did to acquire Eric Gray as early as he's going in drafts and as high as I've seen him go in auction formats. So, yeah, I totally get it. Just because I think Eric Gray is very good. I think he should be a day two pick when it's all said and done. But I just think it's not as clear cut as the community of Devy nerds like ourselves are trying to make it, for sure. So I'm right there with you. I think it would be really, really weird if Kennedy Brooks, you know, didn't get some decent draft capital anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. And, I mean, I get it. I understand people are excited about the new toy. But it doesn't mean you forget about the rest. You know, like,
no,
there's a reason I still play with. I don't know. I was gonna say I still play with my old toys, but that doesn't really make any sense because I'm a 40-year-old man.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's talk about a guy that we're all down on compared to, I think, most people. And maybe we're not right for doing so, but Zamir White, or Zeus, you know, he was the top running back recruit in his class years ago now, missed some time with injury, and he has had, you know, some knee issues, and hasn't been the most efficient back, and does not catch any passes whatsoever, has 8 career receptions in 2 seasons for Georgia, and really hasn't at any time looked like super explosive, like the player that we thought he could be as a recruit. And so I don't think we have him ranked even in the top like 40. I don't think any of us do, which is, so are we all wrong for that? Or what's your take on that? Because he does still play for Georgia. Like, what happens if Georgia's really efficient and he's the league guy? Is a Georgia running back and a really efficient offense going to somehow miss out on day two capital?
So I'm a bit higher on Zamir than Matt and yourself. I've got him actually just right behind Kyren Williams in my rankings. So, like, I like him quite a bit. But to your point, it's all based on potential, not based on what he has done. So I totally get everyone being kind of skeptical. But to your point, like, I expect Georgia to be really, really good this year. I expect Georgia to not change their identity completely just because JT Daniels looked good. I still think they're going to want to play tight, conservative game plans where they're running the football a lot. And I think White is going to get a lot of carries. And I think he may not be very efficient with them, but I do think that he's going to – I think he'll get to 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns. Hopefully he can eclipse the double-digit receptions. He's going to be fine. I think the reason why I'm not all in on him is because he hasn't lived up to the potential. He hasn't lived up to the billing of being the number one running back in that class. And there's other guys that just have a much better all-around game. So, like what we saw last year in the NFL draft, you might be the number 5 running back taken, but that doesn't mean you're getting good draft day capital. No, that means you're going pretty
late. Not anymore.
Because, yeah, because the number five running back is going day three these days.
Yeah.
So I get a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah. And so finding these guys that are going to sneak up and be in that day two conversation, like Zamir might be, he might be a good bet, and he has been falling. So maybe he's a value. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really need to see more explosiveness out of him. And I really want to see Georgia not just go with kind of a committee at times like they did last year. I mean, they had five guys with over 30 carries in just eight games. Like, I mean, with Zamir, Kenny McIntosh, James Cook, Dalvin's brother, Dajuan Edwards, and Kendall Milton. I know a lot of people like Kendall Milton. He's kind of a feature back body who could catch it. He didn't really get used in that way last year. But, that's just a backfield I'm going to watch, because I'm not sure we might have a little gap here. They've been our, you know, running back having some guys come out, but I think there might be a little break. Unless Zamir really steps up and looks like the running back of old that we were all excited about like 3+ years ago. But it might not be in the cards. But a couple more 2022 guys. Zach Charbonnet, can you please explain to me why I should be excited about Zach Charbonnet still, even though, you know, he didn't do much last year and now he's transferring to UCLA? What's the sell with him?
Okay. I love Zach Charbonnet. Especially now that he is no longer in Michigan and Chip Kelly gets to utilize him. So over on RotoViz, we have a tool that can measure a player's freak score. And our boy Zach Charbonnet is off the charts. And so Charbonnet is 6'2", 215. So he's a big dude, but he has 4.4 speed. So he's a big dude that can flat out fly, and that makes me extremely, extremely excited. He also has a super high recruiting pedigree. He was the running back 4 in the 2019 class with like a 0.976 score, which is like really, really high. So he has that pedigree. Everyone projected him as a day one, possibly, but more likely an early day two draft pick. So he has the stock. And to me, if he can go out and produce at UCLA, and I don't know why he wouldn't, they're returning so many players there. Chip Kelly is going to be able to have a lot of fun with this offense. I could see people overlooking the fact that he didn't ball out last year as a sophomore and give him the benefit of the doubt, and rightfully so. And he has the potential, in my opinion, of all the running backs, he has the potential to climb the highest based on where he's being kind of ranked now, based on where he could end up being drafted. I think he is the guy. Like, if you want to call your shot on someone to make a huge jump, he's the guy to do it with.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sell. I'm not sure I'm buying it, but that was well done. Like, talking about the potential, talking about the new change of scenery. But man, like it's, and you did really well for a guy who was coming off of a season where he averaged like 5 touches a game last year.
Right.
And so let's hope he just gets the reins, I guess, with UCLA, because UCLA is they have a really wide range of outcomes this year. They've got a really veteran quarterback in DTR, Dorian Thompson Robinson.
He's been there for 12 years, man. Yeah. It feels like we've been talking about him forever.
He's in his 12th season for UCLA. And they have, you know, kind of a veteran crew of receiving options that could kind of spread things out. They don't have that burner, but, you know, they've got a good option. They kind of run through the tight end and a trusty guy named Kyle Phillips. But they also still have Britton Brown returning. I actually was high on him even back when he was with Duke and then transferred out of there, because who wants to play for Duke? And he actually was decent last year. Kind of the bigger bodied guy to kind of give a punch to go with Demetric Felton. And Zach Charbonnet is going to be there as well. But I'm really high on a freshman there, Deshaun Morrell. He was back-to-back like All-American type finalist, because he had back-to-back 2,100-yard seasons in high school. Late commit to UCLA. Penn State tried to steal him away. He had, I think, nearly 40 different offers because everyone was trying to figure out how to get this kid on their team. And now he's kind of on a border, you know, fringe 4-star, 3-star type player, but he's an athlete. He's got that 4-ish type speed. To me, he looks more like what they want out of their running backs. So if there is any point at which Britton Brown or Zach Charbonnet is not showing enough burst and is not showing enough efficiency, and is not showing that they can contribute as receiver, I could see Deshaun Morrell coming in as a burst of lightning and eating into significant work that we like to go to Charbonnet or, you know, deeper college to Kenton guys would like to see go to Britton Brown. And so that's my concern, is that he might just never, ever get the reins given fully to him anywhere ever again, despite his pedigree, despite what the whatever potential we think there is. And so that's my hesitation there. And if it is that UCLA still finds a way to be mediocre, then even if he is given the reins to the offense, it still might not be good enough because, well, it's UCLA. But I get the argument for him given where he came from, where he could go. Speaking of guys where they came from and where they could go, and especially this year, Ty Chandler, North Carolina, I think I've continued to move him slowly up and further and further and further in my ranks. I moved him down because I got burned because he didn't break out immediately for Tennessee. But he was a 4-star, almost 5-star type player back in the day as a recruit. Really crazy bursts of speed. Not a huge back, but he has the most experience by far among any of the North Carolina backfield running backs this year. And North Carolina is going to be a really healthy offense. And all the buzz this spring, all the buzz early this summer is Ty Chandler is that dude for the offense. An offense that just basically gave, what, over 1,000 yards to both Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. We could see easily 1,200 plus yards total for Ty Chandler in his super senior year and be that running back 4 or 5 next year that kind of comes out of nowhere. But do you think he has that kind of upside, or do you think he's capped at like a day 3 guy?
I think he has the upside. I was just looking at our scores for him, and if you combine you and Matt's score, you get to my score for Ty Chandler. But that's more because Matt is super, super low on him. And I think Matt's low on him just because of, you know, you combine super and senior, and all of a sudden the running back is a lot less appealing. Mm-hmm. But I think he has the potential to jump up into day 2 capital. And like you and I have talked about with running backs, maybe that's a bit high. We'd have to see kind of a shift from this past draft on how teams are drafting running backs for him to maybe get there, because I don't think he's going to be a top 4 running back. Mm-hmm. But I don't care as much about the age that a running back enters the NFL these days, because very few running backs are playing into their second contract anyway. I'm pretty certain that teams are willing to get an somewhat older dude, play him for 4 years, and then move on to the next guy. So I don't know if Ty Chandler is going to be the running back who you are early on now. You get him on your team, and then you know, all of a sudden you stumbled into Saquon Barkley. No, but I think he's someone that can be really productive in the NFL because I think he's going to have a huge season. Just the vacated numbers in UNC, like you mentioned, with those guys being drafted, he has the opportunity to really shine.
Oh yeah, and so I'm really excited to see what could happen with Ty Chandler. So we'll see what happens there. But there's a couple other guys. I like Kamaru Edmonds coming in. They've got another running back that they seem to like this spring. That was kind of a 3-star guy as well. That could, you know, take some carries away. But I think he's got a stranglehold on that starting job and probably is not going to relinquish it. But I know that it's a running back conversation. We haven't even brought up the top 2023 guys like Bijan Robinson of Texas, Tank Bigsby of Auburn, Jahmyr Gibbs of Georgia Tech. Some people really love Jace McClellan of Alabama. I definitely like Zachary Evans. Just talked about him with Colm and Sean on the show this week, the flagship road of his show this week. But those guys are kind of slam dunks, obvious. We don't even really disagree on ranking them incredibly high, all of them. But after those names, you don't have to go very far to just get into a range of kind of huge question marks for 2023. But for me, Jalen Berger, running back Wisconsin, is my next up because of the opportunity at hand in a system that loves to run the football with a quarterback that is entering his second year starting for the team. And Graham Mertz, coming off last year where it was super weird. They were just rolling out just half squads because of COVID at time for Wisconsin. Garrett Groshek is gone. Nakia Watson is gone. Jalen Berger is the guy now. They bring in one okay transfer running back, but not much competition for Jalen Berger. And if you know anything about Wisconsin, they love to feed their running backs like crazy. They've had a few 2,000-yard rushers in recent years, like Jonathan Taylor, like Melvin Gordon. They've even had some decent receiving backs like James White. But Jalen Berger, for me, could be the guy to take that next step and join the cohort of top five running backs for the 2023 guys that we just mentioned. So I'm higher on him than most. I think I have him inside my top like 30, 36 overall. Is there anything for you that's holding you back from ranking him that highly?
No, I mean, not really, other than there's other more, maybe guys that are, I think are a bit more exciting, have a little bit higher potential upside based on their recruiting pedigree. So it's not so much that I'm down on him as much as I'm higher on some other backs. But I've got a couple shares of Berger in both Devy and some campus to Canton leagues. So I've got a fair okay. share of him.
How about this? Him or like a 2022 guy like Jerrion Ealy or Kevin Harris? Because I've seen those guys, both of them, be ranked higher than him. I have Berger just barely ahead of both.
So Kevin Harris, I like because I feel like the entire offense is going to be run through him. He can do it all. So I really like Kevin Harris. And who was the other back that you mentioned?
Jerrion Ealy.
My boy, Jerrion Ealy.
Your dude. Yeah.
I love Jerrion Ealy. We were talking about him before the show, and I know that you're concerned about his size weighing in at 190. I think he is just so dynamic and so special, and he gets the benefit of having an offensive mastermind as a head coach who's going to scheme him open in the running game as well as the passing game. So I am so high on Ealy. I kind of planted my flag with him, and I don't love trusting an Ole Miss running back, but here I am.
Yeah, and I love him. I love what he does. He's a really balanced skill set. I think if they would just decide to do it, he could easily, and give him the workload, he could easily coast to 1,500 yards this year because Ole Miss is really solid on offense, and they spread it out, and they need some pass catchers, and he can catch passes out of the backfield really well. Could be a really fun dual threat, but I really want him to see if he can just gain a little bit more weight before he gets to the pros. He absolutely has to do that for me to rank him super high. But he would be probably the top candidate of mine to bet on if he did gain much of any weight whatsoever to vault up into the top four running backs for next year, like and pass somebody like an Eric Gray if it does happen that way. So it's not like I'm really low on him. He's just a really crazy good athlete. He could play baseball professionally if he wanted. He could play football professionally if he wanted. And so he's just an all-around star. I think he could sneak into day two capital, even if he doesn't get the size, but just a lower percentage bet due to being a little bit scrawny. Maybe it's just he hasn't decided to pack on it the weight just to keep him, in better shape for baseball. I don't really get it. I don't know what's holding him up there, but on to wide receivers, and we'll close out there. Some controversial names there that we can talk about. I mean, we could just spend probably an entire show talking about the top few programs' wide receivers. I talked about a bunch of those this week with Colm and Sean on the show as a guest. But how many years do we have, like, no sure thing that we're betting on for Clemson coming out? Like, even just this last year, I mean, we had, Amari Rodgers come out, and he barely got day two capital. But we're talking about 2 years in a row where we might have Clemson not giving us surefire top names. I know that Justin Ross could bounce back and be amazing. There's been a bunch of buzz about him being in the slot this year, and that's going to be amazing. And E.J. Williams did
that's
something.
Right there.
E.J. Williams, and I think I actually have him ranked higher than anybody else. Some people are still waiting on Joe Ngata or Frank Gladson to do something. And then they have two brand new freshmen, Bo Collins, who actually played high school ball with the quarterback there, DJ Uiagalelei, and Dakari Collins, I think, is his name. Another four-star guy coming in. They keep on bringing in these high-pedigree wide receivers, but who are we betting on? Because when I look around, I see so much variance in the rankings for every single one of these guys. So you said EJ Williams is your guy. Why are you putting your chips on EJ Williams?
6'4", 190, and fast. I mean, it's that simple. And he was, you know, really high. I mean, we're talking about Clemson here, so they're all going to be really high recruits. But, you know, he had a 24/7 composite score of 90-82, so, like, really high. I just think he could be extremely exciting. I just envision, like, his size with DJ Uiagalelei throwing him the football. I see beautiful things in their future. I think he could really produce. I think he could become the alpha of that wide receiver room pretty soon. So to me, EJ Williams is someone that I'm willing to bet on. And the thing I like about him too is he's the class of 2023. So you don't have to wait quite as long as you do on some of these freshmen. And then Justin Ross just makes me a little bit nervous with the injury history. It's not like he's coming back from even a torn ACL. Like, something we thought way, he was never going to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought he was never going to play football again. And I mean, good for him, I guess, that he's back. It makes me nervous though, talking about it even, like, should he be playing football? I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But it's scary nonetheless, and I don't like investing in that kind of risk.
Me either, and I don't have, this might be the first time since I started doing any kind of Debbie Fantasy Football that I have no Clemson wide receivers in my top 24 or even 25 ranked Debbie assets or Debbie players. Like, Justin Ross is the closest thing. EJ Williams is right up there near him. But, you know, really, if you look at the production profiles, none of them come in, like, when we look at drafted profiles for, you know, production right. profiles for drafted wide receivers, none of them are even at the 30th percentile going into the season. So one of them is going to pop, maybe two of them this year. I just don't really know which one it's going to be, because Nagata could do it because he's got the upside, just hasn't been healthy. Ladson could do it. EJ Williams could do it. Justin Ross could do it again. But there's just way more questions than I think I've ever had about the Clemson wide receiver set this year. On a few other shows, though, we've talked about the Alabama guys. But you, can you tell me on JoJo Earl being the guy over somebody like Ajayi Hall?
Again, I feel like I don't have it's not like I have a crystal ball and I can tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That'd be nice if I did. I kind of felt like I needed to make a call early because there were so many questions going on around it. And JoJo Earl was just the guy that popped for me, just being able to just seeing his, you know, some of his high school tape. I love that he's the number six wide receiver in the class. Like, he's super high recruit. And again, pretty fast. I'm a little bit nervous on the size. Like, he's only like 5'10". Maybe that's when he's on his toes even too. Like, so I could easily be swayed to Ajayi Hall or whomever you want to throw at me. I don't have a strong take on why he's the guy that I'm putting faith in. I don't know. Talk to me. What are your thoughts on the Alabama
So he
situation?
Fits the mold that we've seen recently, right? He looks like the fast, skinnier, quick separation, like Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle, or even like Jerry Jeudy wasn't a huge guy, or even Henry Ruggs was just like a slant and he's gone guy. JoJo Earl looks like that. Ajayi Hall is a little bit bigger bodied, and Ja'Cory Brooks is certainly bigger bodied, a huge guy coming out of IMG Academy. Just been bigger and faster than everybody ever since he began as a football recruit. So I don't mind betting on any of the three. I think I mentioned before, I actually have one of each in my leagues right now that I've been playing in. So I just think that Alabama is going to be stacked again. And we're going to see a trio come out in a few years again. We're going to see a little bit of a break. I'm not super high on Mechie, but
well, that was going to be my point, is I'd rather go with one of these new guys and just pass on Mechie altogether.
Yeah, because Mechie's going earlier too. So it's just it costs way more to get somebody, because people are already mocking him to go higher just because he's the next Alabama guy. But I'm not sure that's just a done deal yet either, because he frankly has a trash profile. Despite, you know, having no excuses last year, he should have produced a little bit more. Jalen Waddle was gone. But Devontae Smith took all the work, but he definitely could have done way, way more last year. Still only accounted for like 16, 17% of Alabama's offense through the air, which is super weak sauce. So I'm not really super super high on John Metchie, which might be controversial, but I don't really care. But before we sign off, though, just a couple more of the 2023 guys, because that could be a really fun wide receiver group. I talked about this a little bit with Sean and Colm on their show this week, but Quentin Johnston is a name that is not being sold as a potential wide receiver one for the 2023 crew, because it's everyone's all in on Kayshon Boutte, or they're all in on Marvin Mims, or they're all in on maybe even Rakeem Jarrett, just because he has the best pedigree outside of any of these guys. But for me, Quentin Johnston, coming out of TCU, only entering his second year, already accounted for nearly 27% of the offense last year as a true freshman, being one of the best deep threats in all of college football in his first action, showing that he can be a yak monster too in terms of a per target basis, being a top 40 guy by that measure right away. So I'm higher than any of our rankers on him, and I've actually got him over a bunch of top names. He's actually just outside my top 30 overall right now. So where does he rank among, you know, like the rising sophomores, guys going into their second year of college for you at wide receiver? Do you know?
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head where I have him compared to some of those other guys. But
do you have him behind like, all three of the guys I mentioned, though? Like Kayshon Boutte, Rakeem Jarrett, Marvin Mims, easily?
Yeah. And Jordan Addison, even Jackson Smith and Jigba, who, you know, hasn't done a whole lot yet, but I expect a lot from, although with that wide receiver room, who freaking knows. Yeah. But I do like him. I like Quentin Johnston. I think one of the difficult things that he has to deal with is the fact that is Duggan still the quarterback there in TCU?
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I feel like it's really hard. Like it's either, you know, a 1 yard bubble route, or he's YOLOing it down the field to Quentin, which is great. But I just don't have a whole lot of faith in that offense. And maybe that's unfair. It's definitely unfair because that's not the entire story of what makes a great wide receiver prospect. But I do get nervous that he might not see the quality of balls that some of these other guys that we're talking about will see because of a better quarterback play.
Quarterback play, to me, is the only argument against him, because we saw Jalen Reagor struggle with six different quarterbacks in his time at TCU. Quentin Johnston at least has some continuity early on, I guess, but that might be the only thing.
That's exciting.
Yeah, he's long, lanky, fast, really fun. Somebody that I think we need to pay more attention to, could be the next iteration of whatever AJ Green was back in the day. I'm that kind of high on him. I think I may even move him up just thinking about it. But, before we sign off here, you know, one more name. I want you to talk about your guy, the first round wide receiver out of Oregon, like in forever.
Since
1972. Troy Franklin. Because, I mean, we could talk about a bunch of other freshman wide receivers, but Troy Franklin, I just actually drafted him in a deeper College to Kent League because he is the highest rated Oregon wide receiver of all time, according to the recruiting services. So he is a five-star kind of kid, absolute difference maker. Tell me about Troy Franklin and why he's going first round.
Yeah, love Troy Franklin. The reason he's going first round is because he will have Ty Thompson throwing him the football for many years, and that's going to be a very beautiful thing. Now, I like Troy Franklin a lot, and to be honest, like he would be the best recruit anyone's gotten because he was, I think he was the number two or number three receiver in the 2021 class, five-star kid, super, super excited. Joe Moorhead being the offensive coordinator at Oregon, I think could make a difference. One of the things that's difficult for wide receivers from Oregon is they just you rarely see someone with a super high dominator rating. I don't think we've had a 1,000-yard receiver since Dylan Mitchell. And then before then, it was all the way back to 2013. So it's just not something you see very often with that offense because it's so high tempo, because it's so predicated on the RPO and the wide running game. You see a lot of ball distribution to various players. That's why guys like Johnny Johnson III and Jalen Redd, like people that no one else has heard of, see a lot of targets, is because it's a fast-paced offense. I think Troy Franklin is a difference maker that could force them to feed him the rock a little bit more, and maybe he's able to break out this year. Maybe he's able to have a super high dominator rating because he's going to be the main man. I will say Oregon has been recruiting and signing some pretty high level wide receivers. They had two or three, four stars join Franklin. We just signed another one this past week who's a track star for next year. So the wide receiver room is loaded. It's not like maybe the high level talent like we hear about at Ohio State and Bama, but Oregon's wide receiver room is really, really, really good. So I actually don't think Troy Franklin gets drafted in the first round, unfortunately. I wish I did. I think he will be a solid day two pick, though. I think he will kind of change the story that wide receivers from Oregon have had. I think he has the opportunity to be special.
Let's hope. And given where we have him ranked, that makes sense. As a day two projection with crazy athletic upside, you know, maybe like, how do you feel about being in like the Terrace Marshall category? Like maybe he doesn't, you know, like high upside day two guy, and being ranked in like the 80s overall as a true freshman gives us time to move him up the ranks and eventually be a high upside day two wide receiver. And that's exactly where we have him ranked right now. Maybe we could rank him a little bit higher given his pedigree, but the program and how they distribute the ball and all the pieces around him might dictate that he's not like an automatic first rounder one day, but maybe he does buck the trend. I'm rooting for that.
I'm rooting for it too, but Oregon also has so many guys coming back.
They do.
As super seniors and stuff like that.
And
that,
good freshmen around him. Like, yeah. Yep.
So he's going to see playing time. That's not the question, but there's just so many other guys there that it might be hard. Like if he went to a different school, I think we'd be a little bit more excited about him, which is hard for me to say as an Oregon fan, but...
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, we've covered a ton in the show, went up and down the RotoViz rankings. If you want to check these out in depth, top to bottom, 1 to 100 that we have posted on the site, you can do that at rotoviz.com. If you're not a subscriber, it's totally worth it because of all the tools that we have at RotoViz. Just, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I'm actually just proud to be a part of the team. But we'll dive into a ton more college football talk here soon as the season approaches. And again, remember here pretty soon, Stefan is going to be taking over kind of the more long form show, have some awesome guests. I'll be doing a shorter form show. We'll actually be doing two episodes a week here soon around the beginning of August, kicking off the season with more content for you guys. We'll have some overlap. I'll be on the show with Stefan. He'll be on the show with me back and forth, but just want to keep the content flow rolling for you guys. But again, you can find me on Twitter at @FF_TravisM. You can find Stefan at StefanLeCo on Twitter. And you guys take care and look forward to football here soon. And I look forward to many more episodes of the College to Canton podcast.